This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
What a business.
Oh, what a business. And that business will be the subject of our conversation, shall it not?
It will, because hello, Will. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick.
Thank you for
good
coming.
Good morning,
in.
Mug. Morning, how are
Will,
we?
Conyers, we are all right. How are we?
We are fine.
We're
we
having
fine.
Broadway at brunch time here this morning.
Broadway at brunch time. We'll just tease our fabulous listeners with you for
all right,
a moment.
Okay.
Just to let them know.
Yeah.
So they need to stick around. What else are we going to do for them? We've got a present to give later.
We're going to give away later on.
Oh, and hello, Scott from Port Melbourne, who won our book.
Well done,
good
Scott.
On you, Scott.
Thanks
good
for calling
for
in.
Thanks for being a member.
They chorus.
Exactly. Yes. We get it all right, don't we? What are we talking about with Will? Why is he here again?
Well,
remind me.
Yeah, we've got the title Pink Mafia in show business, myth or fact or fiction.
Is but Will part of the Pink Mafia? Or?
I don't know. We'll have to ask this. But Will, you'll certainly be doing your research.
Yeah, I have this week, last week as well.
What does this mean? Yeah, because it's not just a flim-flam issue.
No, I think once upon a time it might have been a reality. I don't think it is now. Mm-hmm. I don't think it is now.
But there are issues about perception, about what do people at large think about show
business. I think, you know, it's funny. It always these big discussions always get down to universal themes and one performer's perception of how they're treated can lead on to all sorts of issues like fear, blame, because they're already vulnerable by virtue of their job. They may be discriminated against because of perhaps taste, you know. Mm. Like, I know when I first came back from Europe, and Nick, you'll laugh at this, but it's true. I had a body like an anatomy lesson, and I had no problems getting jobs.
Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised.
And then then my voice actually took over my employment prospects, so it wasn't so much about my look, it was about, you know, the vocal ability. But I think there was a perception, certainly, that... because back in those days, generally you had one producer. Mm-hmm. And if that producer was gay...
So when you say you had one producer, it means that in Melbourne, for instance, if this is the scene where you work...
No. One producer per show. Sorry, Nick. One producer per show. These days, it's a bloody committee.
Oh, okay.
because... No. Well,
so there's a different... The power's more concentrated, if you like.
Let's look at a Wicked. Mm. Okay, we're talking, depending on the value of the dollar and depending on the exchange rate for the paying of particular production personnel, you're talking, at the moment, with the volatility of the market, you're talking at a thing that might have looked like $12 million Australian, but oscillates between $12 million and $18
million. Is this in cost, you mean?
Yeah. So there's no one producer who's going to write that check. Mm. So now what you have is you have an executive producer who carries quite a lot of clout, and then you have this committee who just want their money back as soon as they can get it. Now, Wicked's doing really, really well, and its advance sales are incredible. But you've got to remember, because of ticketing agencies and funds can't be released to these producers until the performance has actually happened, mm-hmm. that despite the fact that they may have recouped their cost in advance sales, they haven't got it yet.
They can't touch it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So so that just gives you an overview of the whole committee notion of the way things have changed since I was a young man. But so yes, back
what
then...
What influence do they have, though, on what who's in a show and what happens in a show? So in let's just backtrack. So when you have one producer doing a show, what decisions would the producer make about casting, about look, about... and?
Okay, no, I'll just keep using the Wicked thing just because it's fresh in everyone's minds. John Frost's role in that particular instance is to, in some ways, groom the American director and the American musical supervisor and the American choreographers about, you know, this is Judy Connelly. I mean, I'll just use her as a name. I have no idea whether she auditioned or not. she is a this, she is a that, her pedigree in this country is this. And so that sort of grooms the way a particular artist would be treated by a room full of strangers. That doesn't mean that they're going to get the part. And I do know that some argy-bargy went on for a few people that John stuck his head out for. Mm-hmm. We actually have it in the Broadway at Bedtime archive of things where Lisa Ligeliu, the American director, she said, look, I see everything you're saying. I don't see that character in that person. Mm. Now, is that, I mean, and, you know, I have no idea about Lisa's sexual persuasion, but what we're talking about, really, in the show business thing is that the notion of the fear of auditioning, am I going to be right by the person's taste or perception, and then needing someone to blame. Where the whole Pink Mafia thing...
At the end of the day, someone makes a decision, and it's if it, the person who's making the decision, director or producer, they're the ones that have to carry the can for who they cast. And I suppose someone with real experience in the business is going to go on essentially what's going to be gut feeling, like when she says, I don't see that, but... And it could be something totally intangible and almost impossible to describe. So it could be, but it could be taken and interpreted as, well, she didn't like because I'm too gay or something, or because I'm not this. So people put their own inflection and interpretation on that result, which is very hard to quantify or qualify.
Yeah, I know that I would be tempted to make controversial radio here, but I actually really do believe that when you've got the responsibility of this incredible amount of money and a story has to be told, the data on the page, i.e. the folk who come in, the auditionees, the musicians, the technicians that are chosen to create something huge, I think they are chosen on a one-to-one basis. And but we've got to remember that we're dealing... All of these people have their own vulnerabilities and will want something to blame. What are you looking at me like that, Mark?
Listening, Will.
And that's where it becomes a very handmade, human-made object. Theatre is... This is, I think, the reason why I've made the decision to make it my life, because everything about it is... absolutely human. And yes, technology has assisted it incredibly, but when you get into that sort of visceral human selection process, tribes are going to be built by tribes that attract other tribes. And perhaps that's what we're talking about, that there was an era where if you wanted to call gay people a tribe, perhaps they got some specific leniency or door foot in or whatever, but I don't think it exists now. Mm-hmm. Now there is the issue of the casting director, and that's another thing. That
was our teaser.
Was that meant to be a teaser?
That was our teaser.
We like a big tease.
We did
here,
community roundup and do in focus, but you know what?
What
I'm thinking, we should continue with our big full-on chat with Will, because, you know, we're well and truly
into it. Yeah, I'm
we
past
might do
tears.
Our special community notices at the end. So if you're listening and you've been kind of hanging out for community roundup,
you'll get them.
We'll whack it in at the end. We'll just keep on with this, but we'll tease them for community roundup.
Okay.
And we'll see, very carried away, but we love it.
I'm sorry, I didn't realise it was meant to be a one-sentence thing.
Will Conyers, we know that.
We
knew it was a risk putting him on.
Oh, thanks so much. Oh, look, I'm just a show person.
Oh, you are on Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9. Show people. From the musical Curtains on Saturday Magazine.
Thank you. We are doing show people because we're here with Will Conyers in the studio this morning. We're talking about, the Pink Mafia. And we've moved way beyond, is there a Pink Mafia in show business? There probably was. Maybe there's a huge perception of it. And Will, you've just been describing how maybe times have moved on because of the nature of the big business aspect.
Oh, and I think if you go back to a Rock Hudson pool party, I think you're talking about.
Were you at any of those? Thanks very much.
I've used more sorbeline than that. Thanks. You know, Yeah, if you went back there, there was probably a perception that there was. And I think when I first came into the industry, yes, there certainly was. And there were people that you needed to know. If you want to ask about a casting couch, was I ever... Yes, I was. Yes.
Did you get the part?
They immediately asked. Yes, I was going to ask that.
It's the obvious question, I hate to say.
I actually already had the role, so...
You just thought you'd secure it a little.
Well, the ink hadn't dried. No, that's actually quite glib, and it's not true at all. I found myself in a situation where, yes, a person of power at one of our major state theatre companies. Mm-hmm. I don't think I said yes, though, because of... the position that he held. Mm-hmm. I don't think so.
How old were you?
Yeah. Oh, just back from around 24.
So young. But it new is, in the business. Yeah, it bit vulnerable.
This is no, not new. That's the
no,
thing.
Well, that's true. Yeah, but you
but
know,
as an
you
adult new.
Yeah,
yes.
An adult yes. new.
And this business of saying yes when there are very, very, very strong power relationships, when someone clearly has it, it's not that clear about what yes means. And what you're saying yes to, or when you go along with something, it's, you know, when someone's in power, it makes a big difference. But do you think that business is different?
You've known me for 40 years, Nick. I'm as naive as they come when it comes to those sorts of things. You know, I always go into things...
Wide-eyed.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Still?
Yes. There was a stage there where I became a bit bitter, but, you know...
But you do think the best of people. You approach people on face value and assume that what you see is what you get, and you think the best of people.
That's
certainly my experience of you.
Yeah, yeah. And I always believe that also gets the best outcomes for everyone concerned. It is... In this business, it's too easy because of the amount of time that we have on our hands to carry baggage... Mm. About stuff that wasn't pleasant, but one also can learn to let it go and to relish all the good shit that's happening.
Yep. Yeah. Now you talked about the nature of the business. When you're a performer, an artist, you become very vulnerable. You put yourself up to become vulnerable. You're exposing yourself.
It's called Let's Get Naked in Front of Strangers.
And you're spending a lot of time with people and. It gets very deep and emotionally connected with people you probably may not choose to be with. In terms of as an industry, there are sexual discrimination laws, there's sexual harassment laws in this state and in this country. So in any other business, there are probably some things you might get away with, people might get away with in theatre, that you would not get away with in a workplace, do you think? In terms of...
Fantastic question, Nick.
Because it's not as scrutinized, I guess, in that you're not in an office altogether in a clear work environment.
It's a fantastic question. I think theatre is, before rehearsal starts, the most discriminatory industry in the world. Mm-hmm. It's racial, it's sexual, it's selective, by virtue of the nature that you have to build a tribe to tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yep.
That's,
I like that.
That's where... The discrimination finishes, however. You walk into a rehearsal room and there is no one better than anyone else. No one.
And even in the big time where you've got the obvious star?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sure, when I first came into the business, for instance, I was doing something with Ashley Gordon when... the late Ashley Gordon, when he brought Liza Minnelli out here with Gary Van Egmond, and she was playing down at the Palais Theatre. Of course that is Miss Minnelli. Mm. Of course. But once she lets you know that she's as much of a dag as you are, you can have a good time. Like we had Lorna Luft here at Joy when she was out here recently. And, of course, the first few phone calls were Miss Luft. And she said, would you get off the grass? You know, come on. It's Lorna, you know, L-O-R-N-A. And once you know that you're in the company of a fellow theatre beast, no, there's no discrimination. Yet there was a... There was an era where, you know, poofters don't do love scenes, which we've all proven is, with the knowledge of time, we've all proven that that is absolute crap. But that brings me on to the power of the casting director, which is perhaps one of the... I'd say I'm speaking for a good 50% of the acting fraternity, particularly in music theatre. I think they probably find that frustrating, that there are casting directors who, once you're on their no list, you're on their no
list. What's a no list?
Don't hire.
And is that where... Is that about discrimination or just because it's taste?
Yes, why do you get on a no list? What puts you on a no
list? As opposed to saying, well, I need... And I can understand the discrimination about a part. I need a certain look because this person, this character is an overweight character or this character is a particular look. So you've got to go
age,
vaguely within the look or age or whatever. But as a, one would think a good casting director would always be looking for the person who was the right person for the part, and therefore if you stick someone on your no list, you might be missing the person who's just the one.
But why absolutely? Why would you have a no list? What makes you...
Yeah, so
what
is makes it the discrimination?
Yeah.
Okay. Occasionally it happens when you've hired the right person for the job, and I'm probably talking in the first person here, the right person for the job's been hired, and they're very damn passionate about a particular role that they have in this particular production, and... They may be challenged innocently one or too many times and can be considered, I don't know, a troublemaker.
They're trouble.
There are many who are unreliable. And from a musical director's point of view, if I was asked to go back to the podium, I would dig out, you know, on my Apple Mac computer, there is a list of people I do not hire.
No matter how good they are, you know that they'll fail to deliver, or you just can't rely on
bad experiences.
Yeah,
yeah.
And this is the thing, because you're doing something, you're going up in front of the public 8 times a week or whatever your season is. You've got to know that everyone's going to be there and ready and going to give their full at that
That's
time.
Right.
So if you've got any doubts about anybody,
that's right.
Your no list,
and especially now these days too, when you're writing shows like A Wicked, where you have unrealistic things for some of the characters, like, for instance, the role of Elphaba in Wicked. To do that 8 shows a week, you are either carrying around with you, you know, vocal cords of wrought iron, or I don't know.
Well, vocal cords are great risk.
You were born to play it. And that's why, you know, these companies invest in insurance policies for people. You know, like fantastic covers. But going back to the casting director job, I do know many actors, and it always happens because of my vocal coaching practice, you know. Oh, well, it's this particular casting director, so I needn't even bother because I'm not going to get an audition. And that sort of... the reverse side... I'm sure that casting director has a very valid reason as to why that person doesn't get... an audition, right? But the reverse side of that is the perception that, therefore, I can't audition for that person, therefore that cuts out a third of the auditions for the year. You know, and that in a strange way infects in quite an insidious manner the attitudes of an industry that's already vulnerable.
So what's that person who knows they're on the no list thinking? They probably think they've got the talent, and they may well have, so they're going to start making up other reasons for because blame. I said no, or he doesn't fancy me, or she doesn't fancy me, or something. Or.
But isn't that human, Nick?
It is, but as you were just saying, it's more exposed in. Yeah. But the opportunities for it aren't that off. I mean, that's what the theatre provides, is that opportunity for that sort of thing to go around.
Yeah.
But I can't think of any other sort of businesses where that would happen.
Yeah, you know, and so what, going back to the whole tribal thing, then you find that the no list has created this sub-tribe of people who feel that, like, they haven't... They're not going to get a Guernsey for this show, this show, and this show, and this show, because that person's casting it.
Yeah.
And so then you've got this little infectious cell through no ill will.
Mm, yeah.
This infectious cell wanting to work.
How tied up is the casting? Like, is there a group of, say, a half a dozen casting agents who really control the bulk of the major? And I guess we're talking about the higher level.
It's actually less than half a dozen.
Mm.
It's actually less. But they are very powerful people, and it's a really difficult job, because what you're doing is, unfortunately, to cast a show in Australia, you're talking about, let's say, for a rough figure, 10-15 first-class airfares from the States, maybe twice. All the accommodation and entertainment that entails, right? So if you want to put a dollar value on every minute of an audition for, say, a Wicked, when you're getting down to the final analysis and you've got the big folk out here, you're talking, you know, like, it's well and truly over $200 a minute.
Jeez. Yeah.
Yeah, so the casting director's job is to pricey the lists for these people. And unfortunately, what that means is some people don't even get seen in the first place.
Mm.
And, yeah, like I say, up until the time you get the job, it's the most discriminatory business in the world.
Yeah.
But once you walk into the rehearsal room, all which that leaves, and we are now, and then you are working in the most democratic, superb utopia that no other place in the world
gives
provides.
Us an indication of why you're still doing it.
Yes, well, that's right.
Because when you're there, it's really there.
Yeah. Just talking about Marg, the notion of casting directors, there was a song from a show in Spamalot, which this poor bitch gets left off stage for most of the first act. And by the beginning of the second act, she's a little bit over it. And she walks out on stage, stops the whole show and sings this song.
You're on Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9. And you are on Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9. We have been conversing with Mr. Will Conyers about the supposed pink mafia in the theatre, and we shall continue that conversation.
We shall, but before we do, we have another giveaway, and this time it's the fabulous Flag Sisters, How a Boy from Oz Became an Italian Superstar in a Frock.
Exactly.
Will will not name names. He'll mouth them to us, but
so,
we can't
Will,
say
it. You did a bit of research during the week about this whole notion. What's the feeling in the business about the way it all runs?
Well, isn't it interesting? Even when I said, okay, we can call you Joy 1 and we can call you Joy 2, when I offered anonymity, it goes back to that first word we talked about, fear. It's the show business industry is incredibly strong at the moment, but it's also in its particular individual cells, its molecular cells of people, if you like, it's incredibly still insecure and
what drives that, do you think?
Oh, the notion that someone else has to approve of you to get a job.
Mm.
Mm.
Yeah. And, of course, you know, someone listening might go, well, why the hell's that different? You know, I'm a typist. Someone has to approve of my typing speed and accuracy. That's true and absolutely valid. I don't think typing is exposed as standing down the front of the Regent Theatre stage in front of 2,500 people.
Mm.
I just don't think it's the same thing. Mm. And the notion of infecting a large group of people with your work, your abilities, your talent, your singing, your dancing, your ability to inhabit a character, these are, it sounds like we just get our jollies, but we don't. It's actually an elite craft, like an Ian Thorpe zooming down the swimming pool.
Elite performance.
Yeah, absolutely. And all the psychology and preparation that leads up to it, I'm just taking people through a series of auditions at the moment in my position as a vocal coach. And, you know, analogously, I am screaming at them from the side of the pool with encouragement, because it needs that much. It doesn't matter how beautifully you're directed, of course that helps. It doesn't matter how beautifully you're choreographed, of course that helps. It doesn't matter how beautifully you're musically directed, and yes, that helps. When you're up there by yourself, it is incredibly lonely and incredibly responsible. It's only really a fellow performer in an audience that can really stand up for someone else and go, I know what you just did, and you just jumped, you know, over the Great Pyramids of Egypt.
It's a bit of a leap of a question, I suppose, but do those of us who are not performers, can we ever really understand what it's like for a performer?
Well, I would like to think that if you've gone along to be entertained, that you've gone along to be entertained, and the rest of it's all smoke and mirrors. That's the whole thing, is that the actual art, or artifice, if you like, of making it look so easy is actually a craft in itself.
Because you actually don't want to see somebody up there struggling. There's nothing worse than
watching a performer
not hitting their straps and think, oh, my God. You know.
Well, think back to those days of, you know, Safeway New Faces and things like that. We're dating ourselves now, you know, on a Sunday night. But, you know,
I'll go back to Kevin Dennis, I'm sorry.
Yeah, oh, okay, yeah. Well, Kevin Dennis's New Faces, exactly. And, you know, there would be these people who would be so atrocious that you'd find the couch pillow and hide your head in it in embarrassment for them. Is that where I became a pillow bot? No.
out of compassion, Will. Yes, of course.
And that goes to auditions too. I have been musical director, and I've shared this story with so many people. there have been auditions where it has been chronically, hysterically painful. And the panel has done their best. And it often happens in sequences. There will be three or four in a row. And, of course, the ability for the audition panel to hold their composure exponentially decreases. And by the time you get into the third or fourth in a row, the table is vibrating. There is no more water left in the glass, and you are trying to not look puce, but you've gone way past that. Your blood pressure is actually beyond measure, and it's very, very funny.
Because you really should be coming to every auditionee fresh, shouldn't you? And thinking, new person,
unfortunately, that's
you
really
can't do that in the real case. Yeah. So you are bringing in prejudices and things. You're looking at somebody thinking,
I think you're bringing in an intimate knowledge of a story that has to be told. There's been many, many a meeting between director, choreographer, musical director, and broader areas of the design and production team. There's a very, very clear vision, and you can tell within, sometimes by the time the stage manager has said, "Hi, this is Marg Gardner. She's from blah 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 management." By the time that's happened, you know you're not going to hire the person because the picture is so clear. How you give them a good experience in the audition room after that is entirely up to the human nature of the panel.
Yeah.
And I always want the person to walk out feeling like they had a fantastic experience.
Well, it's hard, it's hard enough without being made to feel like crap by the people you're working with, isn't it?
That's right.
We've talked a lot about the higher level, I guess. We've talking about the Regent's Theatre and the Big Time, Wicked, etc. What's it like at that? The non-professional level, if you like.
The pro-am and the community theatre level. I think there's absolutely... We're always talking... All this discussion is about the notions of desire, isn't it? So you've got your full-time job and you just want that hobby, you know, that that really fulfills a gap in your life. And I'm actually doing a community theatre piece at the moment. I'm doing Into the Woods with Williamstown Music Theatre Company, wmtc.org.au.
That was the plug, by the way.
Go for it. And it's a community not-for-profit organisation.
It's all right,
I can do that.
It's all right.
And
you're entitled to have a plug.
And
I'm not going there. Keep, move on.
Down with the pillow bite.
And it's been really fascinating to see the demographic that populates that particular cast, and everyone's different desires being met. And from that point of view, that's why I prefer to call it community theatre, because that's what it's actually serving. Then you have this other area, this pro-am co-op area, which a good example of another not-for-profit organisation in Melbourne is Magnormous, who do a lot of work on new Australian music theatre works or rarely seen works. And they managed to attract, Aaron and his team managed to attract high-quality professional performers in between drinks, and it suits them. Because we're all very aware that if you don't do it, you do your skills. A part of it is like getting back on a bike, but there's another edge that if you're clocking up the stage hours at the same time, it really does show. Rob Guest was a beautiful case in point in Wicked. It's a very young cast.
Yep.
And very skilled cast, but you can't hide stage hours. And he and Maggie Kirkpatrick, when they walk out there, they walk out there, and it's really very, very clear.
Yeah, that they've got the hours behind them. They've got the experience. Yeah,
and that is the sad thing. That if there were a Pink Mafia, or if it is the no list, what the sad thing is that a broader demographic doesn't get the chance to clock up the stage.
Yeah. Out. So does that Pink Mafia no list stuff operate in that pro-am level?
Yes.
More so, because more people think there's an opportunity. I'll be the director or have some position of power and stuff. Get away with it before they get sprung or become on the nose or something.
One of the things that I tried to institute when I ran the music theatre course at the National Theatre, which was the first one of its kind in the country, was I had to try and embed my teachers with the notion of nil personality-based assessment. I think at a social level in community theatre, personality-based assessment is perhaps unavoidable. At the pro-am cooperative level, it does exist a bit, but nowhere near as much. And there is a no list. Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes that's personality based. Sometimes it's because, you know, someone just doesn't arrive to rehearsal on time, or someone's renowned for not having their work learnt, or
There are some people.
Yeah, just taste, pure taste of I don't like your voice. There are also situations where the artist just doesn't get on.
Yep.
With people.
They might have the talent, and they might have put the hard work in, but they're just assholes or whatever, or can't.
Don't have those interpersonal skills. It's a really interesting cocktail. But yeah, gay mafia, I don't know. I don't think so anymore. I think perhaps once upon a time, and we've got to remember that we've evolved a lot. Back when I first started going to theatre, you know, the Tony Lamonts and Nancy Hayes and the Jill Perrimans of this world had only just been given their first leading role jobs, which had and Tiki Taylor, indeed, who I worked with for years and years and years, they had only just come out of the days of, right, well, we're going to hire an American for that.
Establishing Australia as good as anyone, better.
So it's really, really interesting. When I was speaking to Lisa Legilio of the Wicked Company, the director, she, you know, I asked her, do Australian artists stack up, in your opinion? because we've still got a bit of a cringe against you guys. Mm. And she said, absolutely, this cast is amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
And they are.
Mm. Yep. So to wrap up, will your advice to someone in the business or trying to crack into the business, whether it be the community, the pro-am or more, what do you do?
Do you think people, the cute boys and girls, are they going to be able to sleep their way into the business?
I wish you hadn't asked.
As one strategy.
Because talent will tell. You've been saying earlier on, if you haven't got it, you know, you're just not going to make it.
Look, so. I think, you know, when all
said, the old chorus boys sort of thing.
When all said and done, the job is the job is the job is the job, and you're going to get it if you're right for it. And I know that that doesn't create controversial radio, but it's the facts. But what gets you through is you must be true to yourself. You must honour every part of your humanity, because you're there. You are invested as an actor. You're invested with one of the most blessed jobs, which is reflecting humanity back to humanity, and to make humanity a better place. And yes, it's hard. Yes, you have to tell stories that dig in amongst the crap of this world, but you are also uplifting a population to get out of themselves just for 3 hours.
Yep.
Mm.
And that,
and who have invested money to do that too.
So hold true to who you are and what you believe, and believe in what you're doing.
Absolutely. Whether you're gay, straight, five-legged, upside down, black, white, purple, green like a witch in Collins Street, it doesn't matter. Do what you believe in, and like I always say, and you will change the world.
Mm. And as you say, Nick, work hard and be reliable and responsible and all those things. Will, thank you. What a fascinating discussion.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.